Today, a special episode of Vox Talks Economics. We're celebrating the life and work of Peter Neary.
Before Adam Smith, there was a body of thought which is hard to pin down in terms of what they really understood, but it's sometimes called mercantilism. So the idea is that it's a bad thing to import. It's a good thing to export. And the more you export, the better. That's just all very silly, but I'm afraid it has popular appeal.
Usually on Vox Talks Economics, we bring you the best new research, but today we're focusing on the life of one of the people who brought that research to us, and he did it for more than four decades. Peter, who passed away earlier this year, was described in an obituary that we published on Vox EU as Ireland's greatest economist since Edgeworth. Patrick Honohan, a former governor at the Central Bank of Ireland, was one of the authors of that obituary, and he knew Peter well because they'd been contemporaries as undergraduates at University College Dublin.
So he started in University College Dublin in 67. I started in 68. But it's a small place, and his experience and my experience were sort of overlapped a lot at that stage. It wasn't a strong program. It was a very old-fashioned program. Research wasn't really on the agenda of teaching faculty. Amateurish really is the word that comes to the tip of my tongue in thinking about it. Peter was one of the leading lights. You could see crowds gathering around the people who had the wittiest comments, who were abreast of all developments, who were active in student societies. He was a prominent and popular figure, a very gregarious chap with a wide range of friends.
Peter went to Oxford for his doctorate and then back to Dublin to teach at Trinity College. But at an early age, he got the chance to improve that course at UCD. And he did it with an energy and a determination that would characterise his work throughout his life, creating through force of will a more innovative, open academic culture.
Two professors retired in UCD and there was a chance for change. And Peter, at 28 or 29, went for the job. Amazingly, he got it. And people could recognize that this was somebody of exceptional ability who could, I suppose they didn't have change in mind, but they just went for it. And Peter had a very clear idea of what he wanted to achieve. He wanted to have research economists teaching. And he said, this was a constant theme of conversation was that if you're to be a good teacher, you must be a good researcher. He was, I think, quite determined, even tough, to ensure that in hiring new staff and the existing staff, to get them to work to their ability. And they appreciated that. Maybe they didn't always appreciate everything, but his insistence moving University College Dublin and Irish economics generally into the modern world and doing what he had seen in Oxford and what he could see from the United States.
In 1982, with his co-author Max Corden, Peter published the paper that would make his name familiar to tens of thousands of undergraduates who've answered any exam question on natural resources and unemployment. They probably all cited the paper from the economic journal called A Booming Sector and Deindustrialization of a Small Open Economy, or, as we all know it, the Dutch Disease Paper. At the same time, Richard Portes was launching the Centre for Economic Policy Research. He wanted someone who would inspire new research on the unfashionable topic of trade, a topic that was about to become much more important and interesting too.
I launched CEPR in 1982, the autumn of 1982, and I was looking for four program areas at the beginning. Goodness knows how many there are now. But I wanted the focus on the international side very clearly, and that meant international trade and international macroeconomics. And the second thing that I wanted was young people, young, ambitious, already hugely productive, but clearly destined to become stars. I wanted young people, at least people younger than I was, and I was 40. I think Peter was 33. He was clearly a rising star already, and he also had the kind of personality that I knew would draw people into the program, would inspire the program. So it was an easy choice, really, although there were, of course, more senior people out there. We launched the International Trade Program at the beginning of 1983. I can recall that first workshop very well. I started it off introducing CPR, really. Peter and I had chosen the first group of research fellows in international trade, and then I handed over to Peter, and he just took over. That was the way it went thereafter. I didn't have to do very much. It was very much his leadership that made this a force. And I think you have to remember that at that time, and even still in a way, trade, which had been at the very center of economics for centuries, going back, of course, to Ricardo, but before Ricardo, but it was not then at the center of economics. But Peter, with his ideas and with his inspirational personality, was able to draw people in, was able to lead a program that produced quite a lot of first-class work.
Peter left UCD to return to Oxford in 2006. Beata Jaworczyk, later a co-author, and now, of course, the chief economist at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, met him when he was there.
Peter was incredibly kind, very generous with advice, and he was also great company. He was really fun to be around. Peter arrived in Oxford a year before I did, and having done his doctorate there, he was much more familiar with this complex system of colleges, departments, and schools. So during my first year in Oxford, he really helped me to navigate through this very complex maze. And because we were both still pretty new to Oxford, we shared some frustrations over the inefficiencies of the system, but we also enormously enjoyed the social life at Oxford. So taking seminar speakers to a high table dinner at Merton was one of the highlights of our weeks there.
Peter was always popular with his students, whose names he always took care to learn, and for whom he always found time, because he found the task of teaching them to be stimulating. Monika Muratzova, now at the University of Geneva, was a PhD candidate at Oxford. Peter later became her co-supervisor, and later than that, a regular co-author.
Peter arrived in Oxford when I was already 1 year into my PhD. And before Peter came, there were trade economists in Oxford, but there wasn't a kind of vibrant, organized trade community. I started working on regional trade agreements. It was around the time when the Czech Republic was joining the European Union, so it was kind of a big thing for me. When Peter arrived, things completely changed. He created this amazing, vibrant trade group. All my PhD was on trade agreements, and that was my favorite topic. And there were a few questions that Peter and I discussed. So the plan was to write a paper on trade agreements. But then as we are working on it, we stumbled on some features which were super interesting. He was a true researcher at heart, meaning that he was super curious and he always wanted to understand the truth, right? How things work, what the model hinges on. And so we stumbled onto this issue of how properties of a demand function influence the behavior or the properties of a model. And so we were sidetracked because this was so interesting. So we decided to pursue this. And then we ended up writing a whole series of papers on this topic before actually coming back to trade agreements much later.
So what can the next generation of economists learn from Peter's life and career? Well, first, of course, the patient rigor that characterized his work over his entire career, a doggedness that sometimes frustrated his co-authors, but led to research that has stood the test of time. Monika Muratzova again.
He had this saying that research is about science, not about citations. He would spend no matter how much time on a particular question, even if it was a really tiny question, to really sort it out, to nail it down, because he wanted to understand. That was super interesting and super exciting because we were never rushing to finish something. It was really about taking the time, understanding things and doing things properly. Peter was a great perfectionist. The other thing that he used to say repeatedly was, labor theory value is not a good model for academic research. No matter how much time you spend on something, if it's not quite right, if it's not perfect, then you do it again, or you should improve it. You should spend more time on it. The time you spent on something doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good paper.
It's a characteristic of Peter that Patrick Honohan also knew well.
He was quite meticulous in maintaining academic standards. I remember something that I was trying to work on, and I wanted to move quickly to get my conclusions. And he was just telling me, wait a minute, you've got to document this much more thoroughly. I was thinking, well, of course, I know that, but I want to move quickly. But he was very precise, and his papers are rigorous, is obvious. But I think he brought that to everything that he did. Was quite insistent on making sure that to the extent that he could, the standards applied in all sorts of things, in hiring, in teaching, in organizing examinations, all of that, he would be quite insistent. He'd be active on committees, discipline, rigor, standards, and of course, hard work.
But for Peter, it was never all about the work. In a profession that's recently had to take a hard look at its standards of courtesy and inclusiveness, his pursuit of excellence was balanced with politeness and humour, whoever you were. Richard Portes explains.
Peter was a consummate professional. He focused on key intellectual issues. He saw their policy relevance, fine. He engaged in policy debate, fine. But he was really focusing on the intellectual issues that confront economists, not just in trade, in macro, and in other areas. It was that professionalism and unrelenting focus on analysis and bringing analysis to bear on the real world. That was, for me, the key intellectually to Peter. Of course, you can add his personality. It was inclusive. It was amusing. He had a wonderful sense of humor. He was hugely articulate, and all those things were very endearing. But underlying that, there was a very sharp intellect and a bear trap, if you like, if you did something dumb or if you said something dumb. He would snap in the nicest possible way, you understand. But there was no hiding from Peter intellectually. He was eclectic in the way in which he approached things, although the focus was always clear. But it was the underlying view of the world, which was not entirely focused on economics itself, but took a much broader view and took a very humane and human view. That's why we saw such an outpouring of affection, and that was manifest in the various tributes that were paid to him over the past several months.
I think we can learn from Peter that being an economist is not just about what and where you publish.
Yeah, to Yevorchik again.
But it's also about how you interact with others in the profession. Peter was incredibly kind. He was always constructive and helpful in seminars and conferences. To him, economics was not a zero-sum game. After hearing about Peter's passing away, many CEPR colleagues got in touch with me and remembered the ways in which Peter helped them. They remember advice, they remembered the words of encouragement, things that changed their lives, not just in a professional manner, but sometimes also in a personal way.
As a fellow of Merton College, Peter was mentor to Abby Adams-Prassel, who was then just starting out in her own academic career.
Peter's joy of economics was just completely infectious. And so our meetings, both our formal mentoring meetings, but also informally, they just like kind of always serve to remind me of how lucky academic economists are to live in this world of ideas. And I just always came away with so much more energy and enthusiasm for my research. Peter just always listened to what I had to say, and this gave me a lot more confidence, especially at the start of my career, to overcome that imposter syndrome, which is often just lurking around the corner. And he always just used to joke that our mentoring meetings were actually for me to mentor him. I mean, obviously, that's clearly ridiculous, but it did really help me to feel more like I belonged, I guess, in academia and had something to contribute. When I think about what it is about Peter's approach that other people can learn from, I mean, I'm not a trade economist, and yet I still learn a lot from Peter's work. It often has to do with the technical depth and rigor with which he approaches problems. So something I think which Peter often attempted to do was to really look for these deep, coherent, robust mathematical underpinnings, but two ambitious theories that really help us understand important real-world problems. And we can really learn a huge amount from these kind of creative technical approaches which Peter often introduced to research. Economics as a discipline, I think, still can be quite hierarchical and unwelcoming. And Peter's approach, it really served to make economics a much more welcoming environment for me and an area in which I really wanted to build a career. So he never, for example, in his teaching or when we were talking about technical details on papers, he never watered down any of the meat of what he wanted to convey, but he really communicated a lot of these technical material with just so much energy and humour, you left feeling really motivated to understand these big, important, challenging technical questions. I think another thing which I have learned from Peter and want to emulate in my own career as well, is that he really went out of his way to listen and support the research of graduate students, even those that he wasn't supervising. So even though I wasn't in the trade group, for example, he still showed up to my lunchtime seminars and followed up giving advice. Like, he was just so generous with his time. I think this is something which I really also hope to be able to do.
So how can we sum all this up? Well, how about this from Monica Maratsova?
Someone recently described Peter as being the smartest person in the room, but also the nicest. I couldn't agree more with that.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We're here every week, so subscribe, and you'll find more than 170 episodes at your fingertips. But if you only listen to one episode of Vox Talks Economics, you could do a lot worse than What Would Ricardo Do? The Vox Talk that featured Peter Neary from June 2019. Here's Peter again, talking about the limits of economics as a science.
I like to think of economics as a science, but a science rather like medicine. Not like physics, where you can calculate the trajectory of a rocket or a planet with extraordinary accuracy. We can't do that. Doctors can't answer the question, will I be alive, will I be healthy, 12 months from now or 5 years from now?
Peter Neary passed away on the 16th of June 2021. He is much missed by everyone here at the Centre for Economic Policy Research, but his work and his influence live on. For the best part of half a century, Peter's output never seemed to slow down. And indeed, if you read a new discussion paper about international trade tomorrow, you're pretty likely to see the citation, Neary, forthcoming.